Welcome to episode 2B of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to what's behind the world of comics for the average comic book fan. Join in as Toby Cook, David Price, and myself, Ian Levitstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. On today's show, we try and get to know our listeners a bit better by revealing our favorite comic book characters, and some that have fallen out of favor over the years. Oh, and some off-topic ramblings, too. Here now, the host of our show, Toby Cook.
All right, everybody, welcome to episode 2B of Comic Timing. Like I said before, we're splitting up the episodes starting this week with the news and reviews in the first half, and we'll do our main topic in the second, every Tuesday and Friday, so give you guys a little bit more to listen to. As always, I'm joined by our man in the studio, Ian Levitstein.
I am a man in the studio.
And as always, Mr. David Price, the man of 1,000 podcasts. How's it going,
Hello.
Guys?
Doing well, man, doing well.
It's going well. How about you guys?
Not too bad.
It could be better because my favorite appliance is dead, but other than that, I'm fine.
So we went from doing well with Toby to you could be better when I ask you.
Yes.
It must be that East-West Coast thing. Okay, all right.
It's all the time difference.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
I was feeling good 3 hours ago, but now I'm sort of eh, so.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Oh, man.
All right, so the topic for this week is favorite character. And this is something that, for me, was a tough decision. I actually had to narrow it down. Simply for the fact that I have, like, several, and for me, I have to say it would be The Flash.
Okay, which Flash?
Well, see, that's the problem. I had a hard time picking that one, too.
Okay.
I'm going to have it with Wally. I started reading Flash when Barry Allen was still a Flash, right before Crisis on Infinite Earths, but I really got into The Flash when Mark Waid started writing. I had every issue that he did over the 10-year span.
Okay.
I kept reading it when Geoff Johns started on the book, and I dropped it when Geoff Johns left, because that was pretty much the end of the run.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for me, the main reason I got so into The Flash was because of the fact that over the 10 years that Mark Waid wrote the book, he made Wally an interesting character. He went from being this happy-go-lucky guy who won the lottery to being a real hero. I mean, I literally watched the character grow from the first issue I started reading up until Mark Waid ended his run. And even when Geoff Johns picked up, you know, he spent a lot of time fleshing out Flash's rogues gallery. You know, guys like Captain Cold, Mirror Master, even Heatwave. You know, guys that, to me, seemed like second-string villains became real threats. And it's just seeing a character that has that much of a developed supporting cast, whether it be heroes or villains. Plus, you've got, you know, the support of the other species like Jay Garrick, you know, the first Flash, Bart Allen, Impulse, Jesse Quick, and even Johnny Quick, you know, early on. They're just great, solid character who really has come a long way over the last few years.
I read very little of that run, and I think the main reason a lot of people hold Mark Waid's run in such high regard is because he's gone on record to say that he was using Wally as an extension of himself. He was going through things in his life where it just made sense for him to, it was therapeutic to have Wally go through changes in his life at the same time.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like to see. You know, I like to see a writer that can sort of insert himself into the character, because you can tell that the character is going to mean so much more for that writer. You know, and in the process, he usually ends up writing a better book.
And I think that's why I associate Geoff Johns with DC right now and Bendis with Marvel.
Yeah,
because both of these, Bendis and Johns are like the Byrne Perez rivalry I had growing up in the 80s with my favorite artists working at those two companies. They represented the company that they worked for based on the artwork they did, and Bendis now is like Marvel's writer, and Johns is DC's writer, and that's it's almost like there's no DC artist and there's no Marvel artist. It's I associate the writers in that role now.
And I'll agree with you that that I definitely see Bendis's Marvel's go-to guy, and I see John's in the same light. But I think that's going to shift.
Well, it already started since Miller is writing Civil War.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's a big shift for him.
Well, so. I think that one of the main reasons why that they even have Miller writing Civil War is because, well, quite frankly, if they gave Brian Michael Bendis anything else to do, he'd fall.
Yeah, he'd implode.
Exhaustion, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's done everything for Marvel for the past couple of years. Everybody needs a break, and I think that this is probably a great idea for Marvel to maybe get a fresh face in there, somebody who usually only works in about 12-issue spans, who has fresh ideas, fresh concepts, and yet still has a very similar writing style to Bendis. Because, I mean, they're both to the gritty style, you know, the less campy style, as it were. So they're similar in that aspect, but in the other aspect, they're very different writers.
If you guys get a chance, listen to, I don't know what the date was, but listen to the Marvel podcast when they did a conference with Miller regarding Civil War.
Okay.
I never realized how funny Miller is as a human being. I thought some of the things he was saying just had me dying. I was laughing hysterically. And I wasn't sold, not that this is supposed to be the topic, I wasn't sold on Civil War to begin with. I was just like, yeah, okay, it's another event. Maybe I'll hear about it from other people. But between Bendis talking about it, between me hearing about it on all the forums, all the boards, and what put the nail in the coffin for it, so to speak, was this Miller conference, phone conference, and that sold me on it. So now I will be going out and buying these issues as they appear.
You know what? Actually, it's the one question that I'll ask, since you do mention we've been talking about the writers. How much does the writer itself have to do with why you like your favorite character?
Nowadays, it's the writer has become more important to me than the artist, only because my biggest complaint with comics today is that I'll go 3 issues, and then I have a guest artist or a fill-in artist, and that pisses me off immensely. We've gotten more technologically advanced as far as coloring, as far as enhancing, as far as getting the books out there, and you got guys like Jim Aparo, George Perez, John Byrne, Mike Golden, Pat Broderick, all these older stock, Kurt Swan. I mean, just all these creators that put these out there month in, month out, and more than one book, they were able to put books out on a monthly basis. Now you go 3 or 4 issues of Fantastic Four with McCone, and now you got a fill-in artist. You had McCone on Teen Titans, and then occasionally you'd have Tom Grummet. Or, I mean, it kills me that we need a fill-in artist so frequently now. And because of that, My habits have shifted where I'll follow a writer. I'll follow Warren Ellis. I'll follow Christopher Priest. I'll pretty much follow Peter David. I end up following writers now over the artists. And if I like a writer if I kind of have an idea as to, you know, I think Johns is doing a great job with Green Lantern right now. So I'm got my trust in him. He's going to do right by Hal. So I think, to finally answer the question, the writer has a lot to do with me getting a book based on my favorite character.
I think that goes the same for me. I mean, most of what I read because my favorite writers are on it. I mean, I read X-Factor because Peter David's writing it. I'm reading Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. It's the only Spider-Man book I've bought. I'm reading Legion of Superheroes because Supergirl and Legion of Superheroes now, because Mark Waid's writing it. I'm reading Superman because Kurt Busiek and Jeff Johns are writing it. And the books are better than they've been in years. And it's just the strength of a writer, their ability to tell a story, regardless of who the artist is, because the artist is there to interpret what they're putting on the what they're putting out for the story. But yeah, a bad artist,
you're gonna get that writer month in, month out. And you mentioned Whedon, and he's the reason why I went back to Fantastic Four a couple of years back. I was glad to see Ringo as the artist, but it was because Mark Waid was going to do the Fantastic Four that got me to buy that book.
Definitely.
That's what got me to buy it as well. That's because the only other writer I would read on Fantastic Four, I'm not reading the current Fantastic Four. I love his stuff on Babylon 5, but his comic work has been really hit or miss with me. And I don't like the way he's doing the Fantastic Four right now. His style doesn't work for me.
I think I dropped it about 3 issues in.
Yeah, I read the first arc that he picked up after Wade was done, mm-hmm. and I was like, no.
But you know what? The recent issues that were tie-ins through Civil War, the last 2 issues with Thor's hammer, I've actually really enjoyed, and it actually got me back on the book, because for a while there I was really on the fence and didn't pick up an issue here or there, and then picked up the issue with where the Hulk goes all like Uber Hulk. That's the best way to describe it, because it's like he gets a second gamma bomb dropped on him or something like that. It was really odd, and that turned me off to the book entirely. And I picked it up for Road to Civil War, and basically Fantastic Four is looking pretty good right now. I don't know how it's going to do after Civil War though.
Okay, now since you did read these issues, did it feel like a Straczynski written issue, or did it feel like this ties into an event so it just read a little different?
You know what, it was a little bit of both, actually.
Okay.
I mean, you could sense that it was a Straczynski issue. I mean, you could see his style, but also, oddly enough, he somehow captured Wade's style a bit, and at least on Fantastic Four, for me at least, because the explanation on, well, obviously, from the solicits, I'm sure everybody knows that Dr. Doom is involved in the story, and the way he explains how Dr. Doom got out of where he was, I'm not going to say where for those of you people who haven't read it, but basically it's a damn good explanation, and it's not really the sort of explanation I'd normally expect to see from JMS, so that's one of the reasons why I like the issue so much. Similarly, though, I'm a Fantastic Four fan, I always have been, but there have been some writers that have completely turned me off to that. So again, going with the idea that writers, you know, lead you to characters, it's definitely the case with the Fantastic Four.
And okay, so no. Who's your favorite character?
My favorite character? Oh, wow. I would have to say, because of me growing up, Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, is my favorite character. I'm sorry. Oh. I'm sorry.
Done. Okay, folks, good night.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I'm 22, okay? I'm 22 years old. I'm going to preface it with that, okay? Because when I was growing up reading comic books, the first Green Lantern issue that I picked up was Green Lantern, I believe it was Green Lantern number 100, where Kyle goes back in time and meets a younger Hal. And
yep.
And I liked the Hal in that, but I loved, and I mean loved, Kyle's personality. It spoke to me. It felt like somebody my age or a little bit older, and that's what I love so much about the character. You know, I could relate to him. He was from New York also, because that's also great for me, because a lot of DC characters, I get turned off by the fact that they live in, you know, Pununkaville, you know? I mean, in the middle of nowhere, you know? It's Kyle, he's an artist in New York. I know artists in New York, and, well, that's why he spoke to me so much.
Okay, all right. I mean, I'll respect that point of view. I mean, as long as
I'll respect it as well. But I couldn't say that Kyle was ever my favorite Green Lantern.
Yeah,
that right goes to Kilowog. Period.
Okay.
I just Kilowog.
Kilowog's great, you poozer.
Yes.
Yeah.
He
is. Well, I have Kilowog action figure. It's the only Green Lantern action figure that I own.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Okay.
And it's the biggest Green Lantern action figure out there.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, but
I also got it because it came with a power ring.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Power ring. That's the reason to get anything. I want to be able to run around New York with a power ring on.
Oh man.
But no, I mean, in all seriousness, though, I mean, also going with the idea that it depends on the writer, I mean, there have been some writers that came on, I believe it was Ben Robb who came on right after Winnick's run on Green Lantern.
The Black Circle storyline, don't even get me started on how bad that was.
Yeah, excuse
me. That was the Green Arrow crossover.
I believe so, yeah. And
yeah.
That
interrupted a really good Green Arrow run.
Yeah. One thing that got me most about after Jug Winnick left Green Lantern, how easily and how simply they ripped apart his relationship with Jade. I was so pissed at what they did to Jade, because that is not her character, okay? The character that they were writing on there was just another girl. You know, it was not the Jade that I grew to know during Winnick's run and during even JSA. And, you know, when she would appear in that, yeah. She was cold-hearted, she was opposite of the character that I had grown to know. And also, that's another thing that got me. His relationship with Jade felt so genuine and so, like, realistic. And that's another thing that drew me to the character. And when when that relationship ended, I was heartbroken.
Well, they pulled the same thing with Donna Troy, too.
Yeah.
Because John Byrne wanted her back in Wonder Woman, so they basically had to write the character out of the book.
Yeah.
And that's one other thing I will never forgive John Byrne for, is for ruining what was a good relationship. I read the Kyle run, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it killed a good potential relationship between Kyle and Donna.
Yeah.
And it drove me nuts. If it wasn't for John Byrne, that book probably would have had Donna throughout the rest of its run.
Probably, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, mind you, I liked the whole relationship with Jade, but also, like you mentioned, I've read the Donna when Donna was in it, and she had such a distinct personality that meshed so great with Kyle's, and
yeah.
it worked really, really well.
Well, you gotta kind of feel for the guy. I mean, he's lost 3 girlfriends, literally. I mean, he's had 3 girlfriends that have died, so he's had a tragic series of relationships.
Yeah,
so.
Well, the best line in the Ion book that just recently came out was, I think the exact line was, I've had 3 dead girlfriends and only one of them came back.
That's great. That's good.
Yeah. But it's also one thing that I have to mention. When he first got his Ion powers the first time around, when he was all powerful and all knowing and all that, I loved that as well, because it felt so like this is that character was like what I would have become had I gotten that power. You know, had I gotten ultimate power, I would have been trying to do everything at once, you know, spreading myself all over the place. I would have given my girlfriend her powers back, you know, obviously. I mean, it just made a lot of sense. And another reason why he just resonated so well with me.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I've
gone on record with my not my dislike for Kyle so much as It became dislike for Kyle because of how he came to be Green Lantern.
Okay.
And that, between them making Hal crazy, and then here's you know, Ganthet, and he bumps into Kyle and he says, yeah, you know, here's the ring, you know.
Yeah.
Via con Dios. And it's just like, you know, I just...
In the middle of an alley, no less.
Huh?
In the middle of an alley, no less.
Yes, it's like your proposition.
But it's all right, though. Hal Jordan got better. You know, I mean, he was crazy, but now he's better.
I will give
credit to Geoff Johns for making what happened to Hal make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
At least he wrote Ron Mars out of that corner. Because looking back on it. It had to have been, that storyline had to have been editorial driven.
Yeah. Well, it was.
Yeah.
I don't remember who the editor was at the time, but he should have been shot.
It may have been Dooley. It may have been Kevin Dooley.
Did you guys hear about that?
Wait a second. I have issue 48 right here,
okay.
Which is Emerald Twilight Part 1.
Right. So
here I am opening a plastic bag.
And
hey, RoboCop 3 for the Genesis and Game Gear ad is on the back of this.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Okay, the art is by Daryl Banks. Ron Mars is... Oh, no. Bill Willingham is the penciler.
Ah.
Oh, wow.
Ron Mars is the writer. Bill Willingham, penciler. Romeo Tangal and Robert Campanella are the inkers. Albert de Guzman is the letterer. Anthony Tolan is the colorist. Eddie Berganza is the assistant. And, I was right, Kevin Dooley is the editor.
Okay. Well, you guys heard the story behind the original Emerald Twilight being denied, right?
No.
There was actually the storyline that we all know was not the original pitch for Emerald Twilight. And it actually was turned down because they said, and I quote, and this is just amazing, readers outside of the Green Lantern universe won't get this. Basically, they had a story worked out where they were going to write off Hal, you know, not make him nuts or anything like that. They were just going to write him off, and that was that. A new group of Guardians were going to appear, and they were going to claim to be the real Guardians, and that the Guardians that we've all known for the past couple of years have been imposters. And basically, the Green Lantern Corps is going to be split down the middle between people who believe these new guys and people who don't. And basically, it came down to the point where Sinestro was with these new guys and believed to be reformed, and eventually all the Green Lanterns, except for Hal, go with Sinestro. And they have this big battle until finally it's revealed, and ready for this, because I can reveal this because it's not a spoiler because it never happened, but it's revealed that the Guardians killed Hal's father. In order for Hal...
Yes, I did hear about this.
In order for Hal to become a Green Lantern, because they saw great power in him. And that was going to explain why he walked away from the Green Lantern Corps. That would explain why Kyle Rayner was going to get the ring. And the Corps would have still been intact. Everything would have still been intact. Only this whole thing would have happened. And they turned it down. And we got the Emerald Twilight that we got.
I think I would have liked that version better.
Yeah.
If you look at the history of the Green Lantern Corps, I think that actually would have made sense, especially, you know, given Hal's relationship with Sinestro. If you go back to the Emerald Dawn, you know, the fact that Sinestro trained him.
Yeah.
But I'm reading the Showcase Presents Green Lantern right now, and knowing how they try to do things post-crisis with the Guardians, with Millennium and things like that, It's almost hard for me to be reading these stories that were originally printed in the 60s, because that's not what happened. I'm all for a book or writers tweaking things to show you what might have happened between panels, like Identity Crisis. I liked Identity Crisis. I may have thought the ending was a cop-out right up there with Armageddon, but I enjoyed Identity Crisis. I enjoyed... Right now I'm reading JLA Incarnations, which is a 7-issue mini, and it looks at a different era in the Justice League of America's time frame, from when they started up until the revamp with a relaunch with Grant Morrison. So you have the Detroit era, you have the Satellite era, you have the Giffen and DeMatteis run. And these aren't stories these are stories that, you know, also happened between issues of a regular couple of months of Justice League. So they're just enhancing what you already know about. When they go and they tell you things like the Guardians killed Hal's dad, or, you know, even though Sinestro appeared in Green Lantern number like 4, you know, now with Emerald Dawn, he's Hal's mentor. Well, no, that's not what happened in the 60s.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for me to take both often, because I can't. I like reading them the way they were presented originally, and I enjoy it when they try to tweak it a little bit so that, you know, well, if you rounded this corner, you would have seen this, but because we only focused from this angle, you missed that. Now we're going to show you what you missed. That's fine, but when you're going to go and you're going to purposely put somebody somewhere where they weren't when I first read that, that takes me out of it a little bit.
Well, see, I hadn't read the original Green Lantern stuff, so I had no problem with them throwing Sinestro into the mix, just training him out. Because it made sense to me.
Yeah.
It made sense to me.
And also, it makes Sinestro a stronger character for me. You know,
And it also gives when Sinestro turns, it also gives Hal motivation to want to stop him, because he knows Sinestro better than everybody else at the time.
Okay, all right, okay. And I have both Emerald Dawns here waiting to be read. I haven't gotten to them yet.
Yeah, and those, I think Priest wrote part of the first one or part of the second, part of Emerald Dawn 2, I don't remember.
I believe
he's listed as Jim. He should be listed as Jim Owsley, I think.
He's still writing under the Owsley pen name. He might have had a plotter credit on the on Emerald Dawn 2, but according to the cover, it's by Keith Giffen, Gerard Jones, still art by Mark Bright and Romeo Tangal. So he may have had some hand in the sequel, but it seems to be credited to Giffen and Jones.
I should get a pen name.
I'll
have to work on one. I don't know. Levinstein's a long name, you know. When I get into the business, maybe I'll have to shorten that, change it to Smithy or something like that.
Well, it's interesting, you know, since all three of us, you know quite a bit about Green Lantern. I'm looking on geocore.org, and they're talking about what was going to be a mini series for the history of the Green Lantern Corps, which eventually turned into Gambit's Tale, which was written by Larry Niven, with art by John Byrne.
John Byrne.
Which was actually one of my favorite Green Lantern books. I love because that features Gambit.
Yes. It was a great story. I wish they didn't try to cram it into just that one prestige book.
Yeah, I know. I wish they'd flesh that out a bit more.
Yeah.
But it was weird because at the time, you know, Gerard Jones was writing the main series. I think his last issue of Green Lantern, the second series, was 47, right before the Emerald Twilight. And that's when they brought Ron Mars on. They basically canceled everything just for the one title, just so they could flip everything on its head.
Yeah, and by the way, at geocorps.org, they have the original, or at least the plot synopsis of the original Emerald Twilight. So,
Okay.
But it was actually Gerard Jones' Emerald Twilight. And they originally had the script to it there, but DC made them take it down, so.
Okay. Well, since we were talking about our favorite characters, what artist for you has given the best interpretation of your favorite character?
That's a good question, actually. I'm going to have to think about that for a bit. Well, meanwhile, hey David, who's your favorite character?
Yeah.
See, now this is going to sound like this was planned, but it wasn't. It isn't. Because I will tell you, I don't know if anybody played one of the role playing games, the Champions, which wasn't Marvel or DC. You just create your own superhero. I had a character called Emerald Gladiator. He pretty much had all the ability. He had a power ring. He was green. Because my favorite character of all time is Green Lantern, Hal Jordan.
Dope!
See, now, it's funny that you mentioned that, because originally I was going to go with Green Lantern as
okay.
well.
Okay.
I changed it to Flash because I thought, nah, everybody always picks Green Lantern, so I want something different, but...
Isn't it something that we all pick DC characters?
I was just going to say that.
Why is Green Lantern your favorite character?
Has to do with the fact that to answer the question you also just asked with which artist do you think does the best interpretation of your character, my first appearance, my what drew me to Green Lantern was Gil Kane. So, and then Neil Adams, and then Dave Gibbons, and actually Joe Staton and Pat Broderick are also tops when it comes to their versions of Hal Jordan. But
I'll give you Joe Staton and Gil Kane. I've never seen the Neil Adams. Well, okay, I take that back. Green Lantern, Green Arrow, yeah, Neil Adams,
right.
Definitely.
Dave Gibbons was the artist on the title before Crisis or during Crisis. I think Len Wein and maybe Mike W. Barr might have, or Marv Wolfman might have written a couple of issues. And Pam Broderick was the artist when they relaunched Green Lantern that led into issue 48 being Emerald Twilight. So that volume, Pat Broderick was the initial series artist, who also does a kick-ass Firestorm. But I don't know what it is exactly about Hal Jordan. Maybe it's the brown hair. Maybe it's just the fact. I mean, it's the ring. You know, I don't mind jewelry. Everything could be done with the ring. I mean, he was just it. When I was growing up, when I was reading that comic, it was just he was cool. Because my favorite Marvel hero is probably the Paul Smith version of Cyclops. I like the heroes that the other heroes kind of pick on or think that, you know, they're milquetoast. It's just when you have Green Arrow and Green Lantern in the room, Green Arrow, Ollie can pick on Hal. Ollie knows what Hal can do, but Ollie likes giving Hal ribbings because, you know, Hal's personality is just like, hey, let's go play, you know, backgammon and parcheesi while Ollie's going to try, you know, and score some chicks and booze. So I don't know what it was that I associated Hal with, but I was a mark for Hal Jordan. I liked him. I liked the whole idea of the Green Lantern Corps. I liked the outfit. And it really bothers me when you see a story take place of Hal Jordan early on in the Corps and the costume isn't drawn right. And what I mean by that is when you're promoted within the Green Lantern Corps, the green ends up going over your shoulders. So if you see a picture of Green Lantern with no green over the shoulders, like the green looks like, you know, a wife beater, for lack of a better term, that's early on in his career. But once he got promoted, he moved up in the ranks. That's when you'll see the way he looks now, where the green comes to a point over the shoulder. And a lot of people get that wrong. A lot of artists will draw Green Lantern like, and, oh, you know, this is his first year as Green Lantern, but he's got like the full outfit, and that really ticks me off. But seeing Gil Kane draw Green Lantern the way he would show him flying, and you know, just the action scenes in the Green Lantern comics, I was just attracted to it by the art at first, and then I found out about the character, and then I just wanted to find out as much about the character as I want. Emerald Twilight came out around the time when I was kind of getting out of comics anyway, so I don't know about Final Night and, you know, Hal sacrificing himself. I don't know about him becoming the Spectre or about, you know, when he became Parallax, because I wasn't around then, which was fine because that wasn't Hal to me. So I didn't, you know, they were doing all that. That's fine because I wasn't watching it. But now that he's back, I'm very happy. So, you know, so even though he's my favorite character, I haven't followed him through every incarnation that Hal Jordan has gone through. But as far as my favorite comic book character, it's Green Lantern, Hal Jordan.
Well, how do you feel about how the Corps has been brought back and how Hal's been brought back to prominence within the Corps?
You know, I love it. I love the idea of the Corps. I think it's needed. I love the idea of this Corps, especially after Recharge. It's one of the few times I actually like Kyle, because having him and Guy train these scrubs more or less, and Kilowog getting all the recruits into shape, and you know, Salak being himself. I like the Corps because I used to, even though it was spawned from Millennium, I liked when they changed the Green Lantern comic to the Green Lantern Corps, and they were all huddled in their headquarters, I think out in San Francisco. Well, it was Coast City, but out on the West Coast. And so I like the idea of the Green Lantern Corps. I like what they're doing with it. Even though I didn't get any of the other minis leading up to Infinite Crisis. I thought Green Lantern Corps did a nice job being a standalone story. I'm on board if DC wants to continue working with the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, we get a Green Lantern Corps ongoing.
Yes.
Starting in June.
I cannot wait for that, and I also want to definitely agree with what you've been saying, David. Because if there's one thing that I've enjoyed about Kyle's character over the years is how he's matured. And
yes.
How he's evolved as a Green Lantern. I mean, from being unsure about his powers to having absolutely no idea what to do to the ring, through all the personal tragedy, and through basically just experience, he's become one of the best Green Lanterns out there in the Corps itself. I mean, he's matured so much over the years as an individual, as a person, that it certainly shows in the way that he's training these new recruits. And I love seeing that.
And I think that's another thing. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think the one thing I did like about Kyle when he was first starting out is the fact that he was an artist. So the stuff he made with the ring was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's what drew me to him as well.
He definitely had an artist's sensibility when it came to using his willpower. Because a lot of the things I saw, I'm just going, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what an artist would do with that sort of power.
Definitely. And the art as well, when Green Lantern, when Kyle first started out, that made it important to me also. Because the artists that they got, especially Darryl Banks...
Yeah.
When I think of Kyle Rayner, I think of Darryl Banks, because he puts such detail and such wonderful, basically whatever he drew looked like something that an artist would draw, which was great.
Right. Mark Bright, I think, did some Green Lantern issues in there as well.
Yeah.
He's another M.D. Bright. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. He definitely is another artist that I associate with, and
Daryl kept coming back also, which was great, because I mean, even though his runs on Green Lantern are scattered, he kept coming back to Kyle Rayner, and that's something that I like to see. As we mentioned before, you know, it's great to see an artist that actually has a character you can tell that he likes and actually has a run on a title as opposed to two or three issues.
And when I say one of the few things I like about Kyle is that also. Early on, you know, he wasn't given the ring, and he wasn't arrogant. He didn't think, you know, he just could do this, and you know, and I'm Green Lantern now, so you know, you should all bow before me. He knew he was very green, you know, pardon the pun. Yeah. He didn't really think about what he had to live up to, like Bart Allen or even Wally thought about with the Flash legacy, but he didn't think he was cut out for this, and I did appreciate that. I'm glad they didn't try to cram it down your throat. It's like, no, he's Green Lantern now, so he's the best there is, the best there ever will be, and this is his.
Yes, he's
so.
Bret Hart.
Yes.
He was the only one. He was the only one at that
time. Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And you know what? I just pulled out my Green Lantern Emerald Twilight trade just to remember this one moment. When he first met Superman for the first time, Kyle, you could definitely see how, you know, he wasn't just all of a sudden, oh, I'm Green Lantern, oh, I'm hanging out with Superman. No, it was, oh my God, I'm hanging out with Superman. Holy crap, you know? And you know, that was great.
And I think one of the things that I was talking about going to, you know, new heroes and things like that. That's a lot of what DC's going to be doing with Infinite, with a lot of the post-Infinite Crisis stuff.
Yeah.
You look at Blue Beetle, it's going to... I think, you know, two issues, and we can see a little bit of Kyle in there, so...
Oh, yeah.
I think giving this title the benefit of the doubt is probably something a lot of people who, you know, maybe picked up with Kyle, you know, a kid who was, you know, thrust into a situation he didn't really want to be in, kind of stuck with it.
Yeah. Definitely.
I think that's a lot of what you're going to see in the current Blue Beetle story.
And you know what? Every generation needs a hero. You know, every generation needs a hero to relate to. And
yeah.
I mean, sure. You know, how was a generation before mine? Kyle was my generation's Green Lantern. And you know, similarly, I guess, you know, Ted Kord was, you know, the previous generation's Blue Beetle. Maybe the new generation will be able to grab on the Blue Beetle and, you know, maybe see him as a character that they can relate to. The new readers, you know, the 16, 17-year-olds out there.
I'm sure there are a lot of comic book readers that Tim Drake is the only Robin they've ever known.
Yeah, and I will honestly say, I identify with Tim Drake as Robin more than I do Dick Grayson now.
Yeah.
Dick Grayson to me is Nightwing.
Same to me.
Dick Grayson is Nightwing.
Yeah.
Because I started reading during the Titans run, you know. I started with the Judas contract when he became Nightwing. So...
I was reading from Teen Titans number one, so Nightwing is just somebody that Dick Grayson, I mean, I know Dick Grayson is Nightwing, but when I think of Robin, I still think of Dick Grayson.
Young Justice got me into DC Comics, and in the first place, and that's why I was like absolutely thrilled when I got to meet Todd Knock over at New York Comic Con. I was like, "Woo, Todd Knock!" that's why Tim is Robin to me because, well, I knew him as Robin in Young Justice, and growing up.
If you like Todd Knock,
yeah.
If you like Todd Knock, pick up Wild.
I got all the issues from his website signed, and I'm waiting to read them. So
sweet.
Did you get a casting call?
All the issues.
You got casting call?
All the issues. Yep.
So you got Firepower and Fool's Gold?
Yep, I got them all.
I got them all.
He has a package that you can get. Actually, if you go to toddknock.com and go to his store, you can actually get a full package of all of the books that he's done. And he will sign them for you. So I believe it's extra. It is extra to sign, but I think it's only about $2 or $3 more, which is definitely
worth it. But it's Todd Knock.
Exactly. It's Todd Knock. And you got to support a guy like Todd Knock.
Yeah.
I know that, like, when we're talking about characters that we love, I mean, how about some characters that we hate?
Oh.
Or at least characters that have fallen out of favor.
Okay. Batman written by Frank Miller. No, I'll.
I'll start Batman.
See, and I'm reading that, and well, I just there's my guilty pleasure, I guess.
I guess.
I don't. Let's see.
It's Sin City Batman. I can't catch on to Sin City Batman.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah. Let me think about that as far as characters that I'm not keen on anymore.
You got any off the top of your head, Toby?
The Avengers.
Okay. I'll
explain that.
Okay.
I'll explain. I'm an old school Avengers fan. I've been reading since about 200, back when you had the Trial of Yellow Jacket, the whole thing with Egghead and all that, and the Masters of Evil. And I read everything up to the whole Avengers Disassemble thing. My biggest problem with the new Avengers lineup is the Avengers were never about superstar characters. And that's what New Avengers seems like to me.
The Justice League.
Spider-Man. But they don't need to be the Justice League.
Yeah.
There's already a Justice League.
Yeah.
We don't need that. Marvel's thing about the Avengers has always been, it's always been a collection of their greatest heroes, not their most popular. I mean, you had Captain America, you had Iron Man, you had Thor, you had guys like Hawkeye, guys who were never big heroes, when they first started out, but they were given a chance to shine in the Avengers. I don't see that with the current book. I mean, granted, you got Luke Cage, who's always been kind of not really given a chance to shine, and he's been given a chance to shine in New Avengers. Spider-Woman, I can give or take. It depends on who's writing her. Echo, or Ronin, or whatever you want to call her. But
oh, boy, don't even get me started on that.
I don't understand how that works. I don't...
I don't understand how she was drawn like a guy and then all of a sudden is revealed to be Echo, I mean...
Yeah, maybe that was the armor, the way... It does kind of make sense, though.
Yeah.
If you want to fool somebody, you can pad those, because I've seen, women, take down... That would make sense.
I guess.
But yeah, it's still...
Yeah.
Completely throws suspension of disbelief out the window.
Definitely.
But... Does Wolverine need to be in every single Marvel book?
Well,
I think I think that's my biggest complaint.
Yeah, well, I think that my favorite moment, though, is when Bendis said that the reason why Wolverine is in New Avengers is that just so it was almost like a throw to the fans. He wanted them in the book just so that Wolverine could sit in the background and do nothing. He'll just on occasion, you know, smoke a cigar or, you know, say something funny and then just, you know, walk off the panel. He's on the Avengers, but he's not doing anything on the Avengers.
He really hasn't done anything, so I guess that's okay. But I think my biggest complaint is it was never about the Superstar character. I mean, to me, the Avengers have all been Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Scarlet Witch, Vision, Quicksilver at some points, Namor when he's not insane, Hank Pym, depending on which version of Hank Pym you want to go with, and Wonder Man. Wonder Man was always one of the
yeah.
I guess Beast, but that to me it was these were second string characters that were given a chance to pass.
Yeah.
You know, they were given they were very well developed. I mean, you had guys like Hercules, you had She-Hulk, the list goes on and on. But the reason I like the way that New Avengers kind of tilts that on its head. These are not characters that I could see being Avengers.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
I mean, Spider-Man was always never wanting to be an Avenger, and now he's an Avenger.
Living in Avengers Tower. That's even weirder, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that was the big thing. I miss Avengers Mansion.
Yeah, I guess. One character that I can think of right off the bat that I'm not exactly fond of anymore that I definitely was fond of in the 90s, and it could very well just be the fact that I'm older now. Gambit. Oh, Gambit.
Okay.
The evolution of this character seems to have gone backwards. You know, he had an iron backstory back in the day. You know, you knew exactly what he was, although there was still a bit of mystery to him. You know, he's from the Thieves Guild, and he seemed to have dropped the Thieves Guild entirely. They never even mentioned it anymore. And his relationship with Rogue is just gone flat. And now this whole thing where he's a horseman of the apocalypse? Are you kidding me? This is Gambit here, okay? He's an outcast, but he's not a horseman of the apocalypse, you know? Don't try and repeat what you did with Angel. With Gambit, damn. It's just not going to happen.
Okay.
The whole thing with Angel is it made that character interesting.
Yeah.
And the only time was during John Layman's run.
Yeah.
The 12-issue Gambit series that he did, because he used the Thieves Guild heavily.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
in fact, he did a great X-Men crossover that wasn't really a crossover. I recommend if you can find they're probably pretty easy to find the back issues of, but if you can, he used Brother Voodoo.
Yes.
I mean, nobody uses Brother Voodoo.
I love Brother Voodoo.
If you can
Voodoo.
Find these issues, just the way that he used Gambit, he made Gambit fun to read.
Yeah.
It's too bad that series didn't go on, because I had a lot of fun reading it.
Yeah, well, and that's the main problem with the character, though. Like, with most of the people that write him these days, there's no fun in him whatsoever, you know? He was blind for a while. That made no sense whatsoever. I mean, you know, I mean, like, so you're making Daredevil, you're making him into Daredevil. Fantastic. But, I mean, I don't know. They've run out of ideas with the character, and I'd rather see him put to sleep than continue the way he is.
You're never going to put him out the pasture as long as he's still using the sun.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, boy. You think of anything, David?
I don't think I have any characters that have fallen out of favor. I just think I have writers that don't know how to write the characters I like. Was Lieberman when he took over the final issues of Harley Quinn. I have no idea what the hell he was doing with that character. And I still bought it. I have a complete run of that title. And when Kessel left, I sobbed. I don't like how Jim Lee redesigned Cyclops. That's basically it. Just when a creator decides to just get a little crazy with another character that either is just written completely wrong or just does a complete 180 with a character, and you're left scratching your head from one issue to the next.
Hence people.
I never had a problem with Speedball. I liked New Warriors. I have no idea what the hell power the character had, but I didn't think he was a bad character the way everybody else talks about him.
Well, I can give you a brief idea of Speedball. His power was a kinetic energy bat.
Okay.
Basically, his power was kinetic energy. He was literally invulnerable because you could throw him against a wall, bounce off, and he could redirect kinetic energy.
Okay.
Let's see
all
if
right.
I can find. See if I can find a profile of him here.
Well, you know, kinetic energy is a pretty cool power to have, I gotta say.
Well, realize he was created by Steve Ditko.
Yep. So as soon as you say kinetic energy, that's one artist I think of.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he definitely. Here we go. Pulling up a Wikipedia article on Steve.
Oh, guys, I gotta mention this quickly here because
when in doubt, go to Wikipedia.
Yes. Okay, this goes completely off topic, but I just need to congratulate Mike Norton on filling in on a Runaways.
Yeah, 3-issue arc, picking up
yes.
after 218.
Yes, so, yes, definitely. Just needed
so
to throw
congratulations
that out there.
Congratulations to Mike Norton, and I guess we should mention his podcast, which is Crankcast. We'll put a link up on the website.
Definitely.
It.
Yeah, we're gonna put a whole bunch of podcasts we love and the links in the over the next week or so. So we'll have Bruce Sars up there. We'll have Crankcast. We'll have Collect the Comics Library. We'll have the works up there. So.
So here's a slight spoiler when reading this Speedball profile. Status is deceased, but notable aliases. The Masked Marvel. Remember we were talking about that earlier?
Yeah.
So, yeah, apparently he gained access to this kinetic energy field or something.
And named himself after a drug.
I'm quite sure Mr. Ditko wasn't aware of that.
Well, just like Mary Jane, I'm sure that Mr. Lee didn't know exactly what he was naming.
I don't know about all that.
Oh boy!
And his first appearance was Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 22, written by Roger Stern with art by Steve Ditko.
Steve Ditko, yep.
Well, that's got to say something about your character, you know. I mean, the fact that you're created by one of the best names in comics. So
true.
Unfortunately, it wasn't the best character. the best time he was used was during New Warriors, honestly.
Yeah.
But that costume was horrible.
Yeah. You know, his more recent look, looked a bit better.
Yeah, it was more streamlined. The stuff in the last New Warriors miniseries was much better. Alright, so you guys got anything else? Can you think of anything else?
I basically just want to end on saying that some of your favorite characters might very well depend on who's writing them at a particular time, and favorite characters can shift throughout the years depending on how old you are also, because like I said, I mean, Kyle is my favorite character now. I don't know if he'll be my favorite character 5-10 years from now, but I hope he will. But it all depends on who's writing him, and it all depends on what stories he's in.
All right. I mean, to expound on that, it also depends on where you are in your life when you come across that character. I mean, it just could be, for example, my favorite of all time movie is Chasing Amy, and that's because of where I was in my life, what had happened in my life prior to me seeing that movie. That movie meant a lot more to me than just somebody that's going to want to see some sort of screwball romantic comedy. If Green Lantern, like I said, Green Lantern is my favorite mainstream character, but as far as just characters that I really, really enjoy, Kevin Matchstick from Mage, and any Matt Wagner creation, really. I mean, but of all the Grendels, I'd say Hunter Rose, but Mage holds a very special place in my heart only because of where I was in the 80s when I was reading that book, and just, it showed me that there was just more than just Marvel and DC, and the colors and the story. So, you know, Green Lantern, my favorite DC character, Cyclops, my favorite Marvel character, and as far as like an indie, I'd say Kevin Matchstick, but like Ian said, you know, based on how somebody's going to write it and where you are at that point in time, will also tell a lot about your favorite character. Oh,
yeah. I definitely would have to agree with that. As far as, you know, like I said, you know, my favorite DC character being the Flash, favorite Marvel character, that's changed over the years. Right now, I'd probably say Captain America.
Okay,
He's become a more interesting character to me because there's so much history there. As far as the character, I don't know, I'd probably go with Hellboy. Just simply for the fact that the one time I've seen him used and used well was in a crossover, the Batman Hellboy Starman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
if I was to really think about it, if I was going to go back, if I could make a change and go back and, you know, choose a different character as far as DC goes, probably go with the Jack Knight Starman.
Okay.
And just simply for the fact that James Robinson. I mean, he made a character that was interesting, that was believable, that had a strong supporting cast, and that from day one, you know, was somebody like Kyle.
Yeah.
Who was kind of picking roles. So. Yeah.
And by the way, just since you two gave yours, I guess I'll say my favorite Marvel character would be Daredevil. Mostly because, again, because of the way he's been written over the past couple of years, with Bendis writing him and now with Brubaker writing him, it's been solid character for the past, what is it now, 4 or 5 years now? And
yeah.
That's been fantastic. And I'm going to have to go with Mitchell 100 as my independent, because Ex Machina is just fantastic. I can't get enough of that book.
Now, I always have to chuckle when people talk about Daredevil and how they say, oh, you know, yeah, Nat Brubaker's taking over it and Bendis had that great run. It's like Kevin Smith helped relaunch the title. Like, you know, he wrote, what, 8, 10 issues?
And maybe issues? Someday, you know, but Bullseye Target will come out, maybe, you know.
And I can, anyway. There you go. That's who I was going to say. That's a character who has fallen out of favor with me, Bullseye. When he, when he killed Elektra, that was great. When he got his ass kicked by Daredevil, that was great. And then they went and tweaked with his skeleton, and I don't know if it was because of the movie or what, but then they went and shaved his head and they gave him the branding on his forehead. And I recently read Punisher, Punisher Bullseye, Punisher versus Bullseye. It was a quick, brainless read. I enjoyed it. Steve Dillon art was great. Daniel Way's writing was real good. But I wasn't really feeling Bullseye all that much. So there you go for my fallen out of favor character.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on Bullseye. I just don't like what's been done to the character.
Yeah,
right.
And how many of Matt Murdock's girlfriends is he going to kill? You know,
this is true.
He's another Kyle situation.
Yeah.
Karen Page. There was Mila. I don't know if he.
No, that was a what if scenario. Mila's still alive, thank God. So. Yeah, but no, you know what? I want one day, if they ever have another DC versus Marvel crossover, I want Matt and Kyle in a room discussing just
to whine about their dead girlfriends.
Yeah, exactly. Like how many of you had? 3.
Mine was in a freezer. Yeah, well, mine got butchered by her own knives.
Oh, man. Both kitchen references.
Yeah.
There you go. See? They should open up a restaurant. Dead girlfriends.
That's horrible.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's awful. All right, I think
leave him on a high note. Good night, everybody.
That would be a great way to break up with
you. I think, honestly, that's a good point to wrap up the show.
Send hate.
Oh, man. That's a pretty bad way to leave the show. But.
Well, this way it'll get him back for next week, right?
Yeah, we're still working on the format for next week's show. There's tentative plans for some Professor Best, since Mr. Price will be out of town. We're working on it. We'll have more information about it on the website. We'll post something on the Comic Geek Speak forums for those of you that hang out there. As always, you can find our website at www.geekspeak.com/comic timing. We are listed on iTunes if you want to subscribe. Please
and write a review.
And write a review. And please feel free to go and vote for us at Podcast Alley. Just do a search for Comic Timing. We appreciate any and all votes that we get.
And we've made it easy for you. If you go to our website, you can just click on the link over there also.
No registration required. And I've never gotten any spam from them. It's no problem. But anytime you can take to, help us out on Podcast Alley is nice. And wanted to mention that we are up to 27 listeners as of this week. So thanks all of you who are listening, and feel free to just play.
My aunt, my grandmother, my uncle.
That's right. All our family members.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. And like I said, that'll be it for this week.
And the email address.
Yes, feel free to drop us an email at comic@gmail.com. And as always, remember, there's always time to come.